All right, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Gimel and Aleph. The Mishnah says, "Hamafkid ma'ot itzel shulchani." A person who deposits money with a money changer, im tzrurim, if they are wrapped up, lo yishtamesh behem, then the money changer should not use them. If there is some indication of the fact that these are not available for usage, then the shulchani has no right to use them. Lefikach im avdu, if they get lost, enu chayav ba'achriyutan. He is not responsible for what happens to them because, in essence, he becomes a shomer chinam. And since he's a shomer chinam, gneva v'aveda, you're patur from that aveda. Mutarin, on the other hand, if they are loose money, yishtamesh behen. That's an indication that he doesn't mind you utilizing them. V'fikach im avdu chayav bi'achuyutan. If they get lost, then you are responsible for them. The Gemara will discuss what exactly the status is, the shulchani, vis-a-vis the money. But he is chayav and responsible because the assumption is that he will utilize the money. It's a balabayit. If he deposits them with a regular individual, a friend, ben sururim, ben mutarim, lo yishtamesh bem. Whether they are tied up, bundled, or they are loose change, you should not utilize them because there's no expectation that a balabayit needs the cash or is utilizing the cash. You really are looking at this as a deposit for safekeeping. Once again here, if they get lost, he's not responsible for them because he doesn't have any right to utilize them, and he is a shomer chinam. Chenvani, the storekeeper, kibala bayit, divrei Rabbi Meir, is like the homeowner, is like the regular layperson, and therefore he has no right to utilize them whatsoever. That's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, chenvani kishulchani. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes that a chenvani has the same status as a money changer. Basically, the chenvani sits somewhere between the layperson and the shulchani. The shulchani always needs cash. He's always changing money. And therefore, the assumption is that if you give him the cash or the money in a manner which does not indicate you want it kept together, then he's going to utilize it because that's his business. But the balabayit, who's not involved in the money business, then depositing it with him assumes that you want it in safekeeping, not to be utilized. The chenvani sits somewhere between that because the chenvani needs to put up cash or money for his inventory. He needs change for his customers. On the other hand, he can buy and sell on credit like he does all the time, and therefore it's not necessary that he needs the cash immediately. A shulchani, his whole business is providing the cash to you or the exchanged coins, not providing credit. And so therefore, the chenvani sits somewhere between that shulchani and the balabait, and that's why Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda argue about his status. Gemara says, "Mishum ditzurim lo yishtamesh behem." Just because the money is bundled or tied up, you shouldn't utilize it. And Rashi makes the comment here, "The derech kol adam letzor ma'utav." Everybody bundles the money together, you know, the sleeves that the money comes in. So if you give some people money, coins, in a sleeve, does that really mean you don't want them to utilize it? It's simply a way of packaging or holding the money together. It's not a clear indication that you don't want them to utilize the money. So Amar Avasi, Amar Yehuda, bitzurim v'chatumim. It's a case where they are bundled and sealed. So there's a different indication. It's not simply that they're bundled up, but there's a seal on them. That is an indication that the person does not want you to utilize them. So it's equivalent of sealing an envelope and writing on the outside the amount that you're depositing and leaving it there. If you leave the envelope open, there's more indication that you may not be so makpid on the person utilizing the money. Now remember, this is different than normal objects that are deposited because money is something that is fungible. Nobody expects in general that whatever coins you deposit that you're going to have to give back the exact same coins because of the fact that it doesn't matter if you gave a dollar a shekel, you expect a dollar a shekel back. You don't expect the exact dollar, exact shekel back. If you do, then you'll wrap them up, package them in a way that it looks like any other chayfetz, any other object. But otherwise, the assumption is that you just want the value back. You don't necessarily want the particular item back. Rav Mari Amar, bekesher mishuneh. It is in a case where there's an unusual knot or tie on the packaging or the wrap that is around the money. So if you just tie it in a normal manner, that's not indicative of the fact that you don't want him to utilize it. If it's tied in a very particular or unusual manner, that in and of itself becomes the siman or the sign equivalent to chatumim, as if they were sealed. And therefore you're not allowed to open it up or utilize them. Igad Amrei, Some pose this as a question rather than a statement of fact. By Ramari, Keshe Mishune, Mai, what's the din with regards to an unusual tying or not? Teiku, he leaves that as unresolved. So in the first instance, he says it as a statement of fact that Keshe Mishune is like a Khatima. In the second version, he asks whether a Keshe Mishune is like a Khatima, and Gemara leaves that as a Teiku. Now Mutarim, if they are loose, then Ishtamesh Behem, he has a right to use them. And again here, when we say loose, loose doesn't mean literally loose, it just means not sealed or not tied with a specific knot. Ravuna makes a statement that even if an ones takes place with the money, the Shulchani is responsible for them. Now, obviously, there's a problem with our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says if they are lost, he is responsible for them. Gneiv and Aved are your types of standard losses that happen where a Shomer Chinam is Patur, but a Shomer Sechar is Chayav. Once you already obligate a person in Unsim, that means that they're already up to the level of a Shoel, a borrower where he has a higher threshold or a higher liability in terms of his obligations vis-a-vis the object. And Rav Huna is now making him into a Shoel. Gemara says, Va'abduk, Tani, didn't the Mishnah say that it's a case where it got lost? So, okay, the Rabba, like Rabba said, we've seen this before, Tam Rabba Nignevu Belistim Mizuyain, Abdu Shetavas V'natobiyam. Sometimes Gneiv and Aveda, which are these standard terms for items that are not considered to be ones, sometimes Gneiv and Aveda can manifest itself in a way that is unseen, which is if you have a Gneiva that is done at gunpoint, you have armed robbers that come, that's not your classic Gneiva, that's Gneiva that's deemed to be ones. And loss of the object, that's when you're talking about the person lost it, can't find it. But in a case where it was on his ship and his ship sunk at sea, that type of loss is an ones. That's not a loss because he can't find it. He can't find it because his ship sank. And so those are cases of ones. And so to in our Mishnah, you could define the Abdu of our Mishnah not being your standard case of loss, but rather a case of loss that involves ones. And that's why the Mishnah is not a problem for Rav Huna. Rav Nachman Amar Ninsu Lo. The other hand, Rav Nachman disagrees with Rav Huna and says that if it was an ones, you are patur. So now, what seems to be the difference between them or their argument is, what's the status of the Shulchani? Is the Shulchani deemed to be a Shomer Sachar, where it be Chayav for Gneiva Vaveda, but patur on the Onsin? That seems to be the view of Rav Nachman. Or is he viewed as a Shoel? And if he is a Shoel, then he's going to be Chayav not only on Gneiva Vaveda, but also on Onsin, which seems to be the view of Rav Huna. So Amrale Rovo the Rav Nachman. So Rava, Talmud of Rav Nachman, asks Rav Nachman, the Didach Damart Nensulo, according to you who says that if something happens, it's ones, the person's not chayev, Ama lo havi shoel alayu. It's pretty clear from this that he's not a shoel. If he was a shoel, he'd be responsible for the unseen. The fact that he's not responsible means that he's not a shoel. E shoel la havi, shomer sachar, nami lo havi. If he's not a shoel, then he's also not a shomer sachar. Because why is a person a shoel? The basic terminology that is used to describe a shoel is akol ha-na'ash shelo. All the benefit goes to the shoel. A borrower is not paying to utilize the item. The borrower has a right to utilize the item. So he gets all the benefits and is giving nothing in return. So that's the definition of a shoel. He's getting hana'ah. A shomer sachar is a case where there is quid pro quo, which is that the shomer sachar gets paid or gets remuneration for his services, but in return, he provides a certain type of qualitative guarding or watching of the deposited item. But in order for him to be a Shomer Sachar, he has to get Hana'ah. He has to get some sort of consideration for the fact that he is watching. Over here, if you tell me he's not a Shoel, the reason being that he's not a Shoel is because he's getting no Hana'ah from it. If he's getting no Hana'ah, how do you make him into a Shomer Sachar? The same reason you believe he's not a Shoel should also make him not a Shomer Sachar. Samalei, Baha Modina Docha. I agree with you, you're here. Dehoyo v'nehene mihane. Because he gets benefit, therefore he gives benefit. Bawana dit mirami le zvina dit beiravcho zavan bohu. Because if something suddenly shows up where he has a business opportunity where he can make money or he can make profit on it, he has liquid monies available to spend. So therefore, he becomes, Havayalayu, Shomer Sachar. He becomes a Shomer Sachar. So what Rav Nachmanian argues is, over here you do have the construct of a Shomer Sechar, you do not have the construct of a Shoel. A Shoel is Kol HaHana'ah Shelo. All the benefit is his. So over here, we don't say all the benefit is his, because he may not necessarily use the cash. He may not even touch the cash. But the mere fact that he has the liquid cash available, that is a benefit to him. With that benefit, that consideration causes him, or he in essence becomes or agrees to become a Shomer Sechar over the item. And so therefore that's the quid pro quo, which is that the consideration of you being able to utilize this liquid cash, you give a certain amount of qualitative shmirah back in return, that makes you into a Shomer Sechar. But it's not the one-way street where you're getting all the benefit and giving nothing back. Now, if he utilizes the money and he's spending the money, that might change the dynamic already, because once he's utilized or taken the money, he becomes a lover, he becomes a borrower or a shoel, and then he's fully responsible to return the value or the object itself, and he's no longer a shomer. The key element here is it's in the period of time in which the money was deposited with him before the money is spent, or before he even has intent to spend it. In that period of time, what is the status of the money when it is deposited with him? Rav Huna believes that he's a shoel from the moment he gets the money, whereas Rav Nachman believes in that early stage he's only a shomer sechar, because there, yes, he has some benefit, the knowledge that he has this liquidity, but he's not getting the full benefit, and so therefore he provides a service in return, which is while it's in his possession, he'll watch it as a shomer sechar. Eidvei Rav Nachman the Rav Huna. So then Rav Nachman challenges Rav Huna. Hamafkid ma'ot etzel shulchani. So here is a case from the Tosefta in Mi'ilah. Tosefta Mi'ilah tells us that an individual, the individual here being the Gizbar, the treasurer of Hekdesh, deposits money with a money changer. Im tzururim, if they are bundled, lo yishtamesh behem. The shulchani has no right to use them. Lefikach im hotzi, lo ma'al ha-gizbar. If the shulchani then uses the money or expends the money, the gizbar, the treasurer of Hekdesh, is not responsible for that. He's not chayav mi'ilah. Remember, mi'ilah is one of those items, one of two items in the Torah where there is shliach l'dvar aveira, which means that if someone acts on your behalf or at your behest, then you are responsible for the misappropriation of Hekdesh. Over here, the gizbar doesn't necessarily inform the shulchani that these are monies of Hekdesh, but he also implicitly informs him that he's not allowed to utilize them because he gave it to them wrapped up. So that means the shulchani is not supposed to touch them. When the shulchani goes then and expends the money or utilizes the money, he's doing that of his own accord. And so since he's misappropriating the monies of Hekdesh, bishogeg, but not at the instruction or the behest or permission of the gizbar, he becomes the responsible party and he is chayav in the mi'ilah. Whereas the gizbar himself is patur because he never misappropriated or gave anyone permission to misappropriate the Hekdesh. Bimutarim, on the other hand, if they are loose, which means or indicates that the shulchani can utilize them, ishtamesh ben, the shulchani will utilize them or has permission to utilize them. Vikach imhotzi mala gizbar. If he expends the money or utilizes the money, the gizbar then is responsible. Shulchani, again, doesn't know these are ma'ot Hekdesh. He has no idea that this is money of Hekdesh. So let's assume that the gizbar, when he deposited it, did it b'shogeg, that he left it untied. But in doing so, he basically permits the shulchani to use it, and the shulchani becomes his shliach, or becomes his proxy, because he has permission to utilize them. Then when the shulchani utilizes them, that will assign the liability back to the gizbar, and the gizbar will be chayav mi'ilah because of the shulchani's action with the misappropriation of the Hekdesh. The shulchani is off the hook because he didn't know it was Hekdesh, and he had permission to utilize it, so he did nothing wrong. He acted as an agent of the gizbar, and as long as he's fulfilling his agency properly, then you can assign the liability back to the sender, to the principal. So in this case, if the agent acts at the behest of the principal, doesn't deviate from his instructions at all, then we will assign the liability that is incurred by the shliach, by the agent, back to the principal. So over here, where the shulchani has a right to utilize the money because he wasn't indicated otherwise, and he has no idea that it's ma'ot Hekdesh, could be the private money of the gizbar, then when he goes ahead and he utilizes the money, he is, in essence, an agent of the Gizbar. And therefore, the liability for the Mi'ilah goes backwards, assigned to the Gizbar. On the other hand, if the agent in any way deviates from the instructions that he's given or the rights that he's given, then he becomes responsible because he acted on his own accord. He basically abrogated the agency and now becomes responsible. So that when the Gizbar hands him the tithe money, the Shulchani had no right to utilize them. When he now goes ahead and utilizes the money, he didn't have permission. He's not acting on behalf of the principal of the Gizbar. He's acting on his own accord. So then when he misappropriates the Hekdesh in that case, assuming that he didn't know it was money of Hekdesh, he becomes chayav in the Mi'ilah because he deviated from the implicit instructions of the Gizbar. And that's basically what the Tosefta says. So now, Rav Nachman now challenges Rav Huna and says, V'amart, if you tell me, afilu nensu, even in a case where the individual has yet to expend the money, he's chayav in onsin, ma'iri yahotzi. Why is it only when he expends the money does that assign the liability back to the principal, back to the gizbar? Afilu lohotzi nami. Even if he doesn't expend the money, from the moment that the gizbar deposits it with the shulchani, that should be deemed a transference of ownership. Because what we would say, if you're a shomer sachar in the beginning, like Rav Nachman suggests, then when you deposit the money with the shulchani, in the initial stages, you are only a shomer sachar. That means that the ownership remains with the original party, and you are just a guardian for the objects. So that means that, as far as Hekdesh is concerned, the money is still in the possession of Hekdesh when you first give it to the shulchani, because the shulchani is only a shomer sachar over the money, like Rav Nachman says. Then, when the shulchani goes and expends the money, he changes from this relationship being a shomer sachar to a loveh, or to a shoel, to a borrower of the money. That's the moment of change of ownership, and that's why you're chayav in the mi'ilah at that moment. But for you, Rav Huna, who says that from moment number one, as soon as you hand the money to the shulchani, he becomes a shoel over it, that means that the change in ownership doesn't happen when he expends the money. It happens the moment you hand him the money, he becomes a responsible party. He becomes like the owner over the money. And the mi'ilah, or basically the misappropriation of Hekdesh, takes place at the moment he hands it to him, not when he expends the money later on. So that's Rav Nachman's challenge to Rav Huna. Why, according to you, does the Tosefta in Mi'ilah say that he's only responsible, the Gizbar, for the Mi'ilah, the misappropriation of the Shulchani, in the case of the loose money, when he expends the money, he should be responsible from the moment that he hands it over to him. Samarlei, Huadin, Afagav de lo Hotzi. You're right. The Tosefta is Lav Dafka. When it says Hotzi, that he expended the money, doesn't mean literally that he expended the money. It means that he handed it to him, and he could expend the money. So then, why does it write im hotzi? I did the Tanya Resha hotzi, because in the first half of the Braita, the Tosefta, then when he says he expended the money, that means literally. Tana Seifa nami hotzi. Then it writes in the Seifa hotzi for parallel structure in the Tosefta. In the first case of the Tosefta, the Shulchani only becomes chayav in mi'ilah when he expends the money. Because until that point in time, he had no permission to touch the money. It was wrapped up. It was bundled. He shouldn't have used it. Only when he, quote unquote, takes it without permission and expends it, then he becomes responsible for it, because then he abrogated his agency or whatever he was supposed to do on behalf of the Gizbar. That's when he becomes chayav in mi'ilah. So there it's dafka hotzi. So even though in the latter part of the Braita, according to Rav Huna, it is not dafka hotzi, even when you hand him the money, as soon as you give it to the shulchani, the Gizbar is chayav in mi'ilah, because he changed ownership in a sense, he made him into a shoel. Nevertheless, the Braita used the word hotzi because of the parallel structure to the resha. But it means lav dafka, that he was hotzi. As soon as the money is given to him, according to Rav Huna, you become chayav. Hashaleach yad bepikadom. So here we've been speaking about shlichut yad, when a shomer goes ahead and here misuses, misappropriates an item that was given to him to watch. Beit Shammai umrim yilakeh b'chaser u'b'yeter. Beit Shammai says he is responsible both for the appreciation and depreciation. The way that Rashi explains it, which become more obvious from the Gemara, is that you have 2 points of time. You have a point in time where you have losses incurred b'shat agzela, at the point of theft, the point of shlichud yad. If the item goes down in value, if we tell you you're chayav b'shat agzela, that's the worst situation for you. The other possibility is that you're only chayav for the item when it changes. There's a shinui, or you're motzi the item. So what Beit Shammai says is that you are hit with, use that in quotes, you are hit with higher of shata gzela or the shata hotza'a, the higher value of the item at the time that you were sholeach yad, or the higher value of the time period in which you are motzi the item, or the item leaves your possession, it's no longer returnable in its original form. Which is that we know that if someone steals something, as long as the gzela or the object is intact, he can return it be'en, he can return the actual object, and that's considered to be b'shevet ha'gzela asher gazal. You can say, harei shalcha lifanecha, here's your object back. That's whether it's appreciated, depreciated, whatever's happened to the object, doesn't matter. You hand him back the original object, then you've accomplished b'shevet ha'gzela asher gazal. So here, where he doesn't have the object intact, at which point did he become chayav for the object? What Beit Shammai says is the point or the threshold where he became chayav is when the price was higher between the time of the gzela and the time of hotza'ah, or the time that the item went through some sort of shinoi or was out of his possession. On the other hand, Beit Hillel omrim kishat hotza'ah, at the time that the item leaves his possession, where it becomes no longer returnable, that's when he becomes responsible for the item, and that's the price which he pays. Rabbi Akiva omer kishat hatviyah. Rabbi Akiva says that it's based on the time period where he comes to court and makes a claim in court. So here you have three opinions as to when the point in time where a person is deemed to be shaleach yad and becomes fully responsible for the object. Again, if the object's intact, there's nothing to speak about because he hands the object back and it's harei shalcha lefanecha. The case here is a case where the object is no longer extant or no longer intact, and he cannot return the object. He has to return the value of the object. What is the value of the object? When do we determine the point at which we assess the value of the object? Beit Shammai says the higher of the shata gzela, the shata shlichut yad, or the time period where the item is no longer returnable. Beit Hillel says it's at the point where the item is no longer returnable. That's the threshold. Rabbi Akiva says b'shata tviyah. And even though, as we've noted, and the Gemara is going to make this clear now, that generally, kol ha'gazanim kishat ha'gzela. Anytime you have a thief, we say that he is chayav, or he becomes responsible for the item, kishat ha'gzela. The moment he steals it, he becomes the quote-unquote owner of the object, because he becomes chayav and onsin at that point in time. And since he's responsible for it, he becomes the owner, and you pay kishat ha'gzela. If the item's intact, again, he could use that in lieu of making the value payment, but if the item's not intact, he pays kishat ha'gzela. The difference by shlichut yad is the nature of shlichut yad. Shlichut yad is a case in which the object came into your possession in a permissible fashion. You were a shomer. You were a guardian for this object. It was given to you. The problem now is your shaleach yad is that you are now either intending or actually misappropriating, taking this item when you shouldn't have. So you become a gazlan. But not a gazlan in the classic sense of when the person goes and takes the object. Kishat ha'gzela means that the moment you stole it, you took it without permission at that moment. That's the moment in which you became the gazlan. When you are the shomer over the item, because you have it with permission, it's fuzzier the point in time at which you become a gazlan. Where is that threshold? Because technically, it's supposed to be in your possession. So when do you become the gazlan on the object? And that partly might contribute to the difference in opinion over here, as to when you come chayav, or what is the value point at which you are chayav for the gzela, and it might be influenced by the fact that shlichut yad is different than gzela, your classic case of gzela. So Amar Rabba, Haiman de gozel chavita de chamra, someone who steals a barrel, pitcher of wine, mi chavrei from his friend, mi kara shav yezuza, in the beginning when he stole it, it was worth a zuz. Hashta shav yarba, now it's worth 4 zuz. Tavra, if he breaks it, meaning the gazlan himself breaks it, o shatia, or he drinks it, mishaleim arba'a, he pays 4 zuz. The reason being is until that point in time, the gazlan had the right to return the object intact. So as long as he had the pitcher or barrel of wine that he had stolen, he could have returned it. At what point does he make it unreturnable? At the point in time, either he breaks it or he drinks it, because then he can no longer return the item intact, and therefore he becomes responsible for the value at that moment in time. Itbar memela, on the other hand, if it breaks by itself, mishalem zuza, he pays a zuz. He pays the original price at the time of the theft. My taima. Kaven de iita hadra de mara beina. Since if it was still extant, he could return it to the original owner intact. Haishata de kashati le oko de katavrala kagazal mine. So at the moment that either he drinks it or breaks it, that's the moment that he really becomes a gazlan. Of course, he's a gazlan from the moment he took it. But in terms of changing over from the return of the object to the return of the value, when does that happen? As long as the object is intact, the return of the object is what he would do, or that is what he's responsible to do. When does it switch from being return of object to return of value? When he damages it, or he drinks it, where he makes it impossible to return it. So at that moment, he becomes responsible for the value. So we assign him the price at that time, which is the four zuz, the higher price. On the other hand, when it breaks by itself, then he is not responsible, because basically what it does is it retroactively makes him a gazlan from the moment that he took it, which is that the moment he took it, he still had the object in hand to return it. Then it breaks by itself. The object itself explodes, breaks, whatever the reason is that it's broken, nothing to do with him, but some exogenous variable that causes the item to no longer be returnable. Now, he didn't change the status. He didn't make it unreturnable. So he's not a gazlan at that moment. When was he a gazlan? At the moment he took it out of the possession of the other party. When it broke retroactively, it made it that that was the moment of theft because he can no longer return the object. So in that case, he's only chayav ezuz because he's a gazlan, or his contribution is from the time that he took it, not the time that it broke. And that's the difference in the din. Vitnan. In addition to that, we have a Mishnah that says, Kol ha-gazlanim mishalmim kishata gzela. Any gazlan pays at the time of the gzela. And so therefore, in the case where he breaks it, or he drinks it, that is the shata gzela. Itbar memela, but when it breaks by itself, mishalim zuza, my taima, hashta lo avi lava lo midet. He didn't do anything now. Amaykai mechavit le, why is he responsible? Aishata de gazla. With the time that he stole it. That's the action that he took that caused the problem. Haishata zuzuhu deshavya. That's the moment when it was worth a zuz. So basically, when is he considered to be a gazlan? It's an interesting dynamic, because of course he's the thief from the moment he takes it. But there is a secondary status of gazlan, which is when the object becomes unreturnable because of your action. In the case where you break it or drink it, it became unreturnable because of your action at that moment. You become that second stage of a gazlan at that moment, and that's why you pay like the four zuz. The other hand, when you steal it and it breaks by itself, the only action that you took that brought it to the point of being unreturnable was the original theft. And therefore, you become that second stage gazlan retroactively from the moment that you took it. So that is now our basic premise or thesis with regards to a gazlan. Now, our Mishnah, it's not. Beit Hillel omrim kishat hotza'ah. Beit Hillel says that you pay like the time that you expended it. My kishat hotza'ah. What does it mean at the time that you expended it, the time that it is no longer returnable? Ilei mekishat hotza'ah min olam. It means like when it leaves the world, when it's no longer returnable. Obemai. What is the exact scenario over here? Ibeh chaser, if it is that it diminished in value, mi ika lamanda amar. Is there anybody who says that you would pay the lesser amount? Meaning that at the time he stole it, it was worth 5. The time that he breaks it, it is worth 1. Is there anybody in the world that says that you pay 1 in that scenario? Vatznan, kol ha-gazlanim mishalmim kishat ha-gzela. You pay based on the time that you stole. V'ibe yeter, if it appreciated and went up in value, hainu Beit Shammai. Then they're saying nothing more than what Beit Shammai said. So the Gemara now is bothered by the position of Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says the determining point of value is the shat hotza'ah, which we're interpreting now mean the time period where the object is no longer returnable. Gemara says, you know, all that information I gave you before about the item breaking versus the item breaking by its, you breaking the item versus the item breaking by itself, that's only true when the value of the item increased, because then we can make you liable for more. But if the value of the item diminished, then even in the case where you drink it later on or break it later on, we're still going to assign you the liability of the shatak zela, because that's when you were a thief in reality. That's when you took it. And therefore, you're responsible for the price. So at that moment, if that's the highest price, that's what you're going to pay. If later on it goes up in value, then they'll make a difference whether it broke by itself or you break it or you drink it at that point in time. So you're going to pay the higher of the shatak zela or the period in time in which you make it unreturnable. That basically is the shita of Beit Shammai in the Mishnah. That's what the Gemara says. If you say that the object went up in value, then you're saying exactly what Beit Shammai says in the Mishnah. So then what is the position of Beit Hillel? If you say you pay when it goes down in value and you pay the lower price, Gemara says there's no such opinion. Nobody believes that you have a right to pay the lower amount when it went down or diminished in value from the time of the Shatak Zela. So now the Gemara says, Elap Shita Kishat Hotza'a Mi Beit HaBalim. So now what they are saying is that Hotza'a over here means when it left the house of the Beit HaBalim, or basically, Shat HaGzeila. That's what Beit Hillel is saying. You always pay Kishat HaGzeila. Doesn't matter if it goes up in value, down in value, you pay Kishat HaGzeila. Lema Rabba Damar Kibet Shemai. Now let's go back and look at what Rabba said. Rabba said in the case where you steal the barrel of wine and it increased in value, then if you break it or drink it later on, you pay the increased value. That means that Rabba seems to fit into the position of Beit Shammai in our Mishma, not the Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says it's all Kishat HaGzeila. It doesn't matter up, down in value. It's Kishat HaGzeila, which is difficult. Why would Rabba posit a position that follows Beit Shammai when generally the halacha is like Beit Hillel? So Amar Lacha Rabba, b'yeter kuli amalo plige, nobody argues when the price goes up. Kuli plige b'chaser. They argue about the case where the price diminishes. So where the price goes up, everybody agrees that you're going to pay the higher price. The question is, when the price diminishes, Beit Shammai savrei shlichud yad eina tzricha chisaron. Beit Shammai believes that shlichud yad you can accomplish even if you did not diminish the value of the object. Even if there's no chisaron, you are a gazlan right away. V'chi chaser b'shute didei chaser. And therefore, when it diminishes in value, it diminishes in value in his possession. Meaning that as soon as he does the shlichud yad, he becomes responsible for the object. And now the balim don't own the object anymore. Since they don't own the object, when it goes, it depreciates. The gazlan is chayav for that depreciation, meaning that he is the one suffering the depreciation. He pays kashad agzela. Beit Hillel savei shlichud yad tzricha chisaron. The other end, Beit Hillel believes that you need a diminishment in the value. You have to cause a depreciation in the value or utilize it in some way. So it's worth less now. Then you become chayav in shlichud yad. V'chi chaser b'shuta de mare chaser. Therefore, when it diminished in value, that was still under the auspices of the balim, because the gazlan, or the person who's shaleach yad, only becomes a shaleach yad after there's a diminishment in the value. So that means that was still in the hands of the balim. Where that threshold is interesting. The Gemara doesn't discuss. If you believe that shlichud yad requires chisaron, at what point is the chisaron enough to make you a shaleach yad? And then everything beyond that is your responsibility. And where is the, along that continuum of loss, where is your responsibility start versus making you into a shaleach yad? I would guess that a pruta is probably the threshold. Once you've done a pruta worth of chisaron, then you've done shlichut yad, and then you become responsible thereto for it. Although the Gemara doesn't say that over here. So that'd be the difference between them, which is that Beit Shammai believes that when the item goes down in value, you are responsible for that diminishment in value, therefore you pay kashat gzeila. But then Beit Hillel says that the diminishment in value is a part and parcel of your violation. That's how you become a shaleach yad. That's the case. You're only responsible after the chisaron for what happens. You're not chayav from the shata gzeila, because of the shata gzeila there was no chisaron. What if that Rova says, which we learned before, that shlichud yad ain't a tzricha chisaron. Rova concluded that shlichud yad does not require any diminishment in value, that there are other things that differentiate shlichud yad from gneva gzeila, which one of the most important Rashi noted, and the Balei Tosafot also noted over there, was that by shlichud yad, even if you only want to take a portion of it, you become responsible for the whole amount, whereas by gzeila, until you take whatever you take, you're responsible for it. So lema rova damar kebet shemai. Now once again, you're pigeonholing Rova's opinion into the shita of Beit Shammai. So that you don't want necessarily, because then Rova, it won't be the halacha, his position. Elohacha mayaskinan, what you have to say here is, kagon shetiltala lavia lea gozlot. This we also again saw back in Mem Aleph. It's a case where he took it, borrowed it in order to allow the birds to climb up, go up and down on it, or that he used it as a step stool to go up or down on it. So he is, in essence, a shoel shelo midat. He's borrowing without permission. He doesn't want to be sholeach yad, but rather he wants to be a shoel shelo midat. We discussed earlier as to what the difference between a shoel shelo midat and a sholeach yad is. Rashi back in Mem Aleph said the difference is the chiyamrinim shomrim shoel shelo midat, but davarshin ukichesh v'chiser machomat ha-melacha. You're only considered a shoel shelo midat when the object that you're utilizing does not diminish in value through your utilization. So for instance, a ladder would be a good case of that. Person climbs up and down a ladder, you haven't changed the value of the ladder, but you have borrowed the ladder without permission. On the other hand, if it is something where you utilize the object then diminishes in value. Say, for instance, it is a towel, it's a beged, where when you utilize the item, it has wear and tear on it that would change the value of the item. Then that's considered to be shlichut yad. Or for instance, you have a barrel of wine and you drink the wine. So that's shlichut yad because that's something where the wine is no longer there. You can't be called a shoel shelo midat anymore. That's Rashi's distinction between them. We did see over here that there are Rishonim that believe that there really is no difference between Shela Shelo Midat and Shlichut Yad. They're just technical terms for this situation, but there's no practical ramification or din that separates between them. So Rashi differentiated over there. So what the Gemara says over here is, again, a case here where he utilizes the barrel in a way that does not diminish the value, and therefore he is Shoel Shelo Midat Kamiflegei. That Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are arguing about Shoel Shelo Midat. Beit Shammai says, "Be Shoel Shelo Midat Gazlan Avi." Beit Shammai believes that a shoel without permission is considered to be a gazlan. V'hi chaser b'shuta didei chaser. Therefore, when the object diminishes in value, he's responsible for it. He's a gazlan, and he has to pay up the money. U'bedel says, "Be Shoel Shelo Midat Shoel Avi." When you borrow without permission, you're still a borrower. V'hi chaser b'shuta demara chaser. That means it's still in the possession of the original owner, and when it goes down in value, it goes down in value for the original owner. So then we have another problem. El Hadam Arava, that which Rava believes, Shoel Shelo Midat Rabbonan Gazlan Avi. There is a Machloket in Baba Batra, and Rava over there assigns to the Rabbonan's position that they believe Shoel Shelo Midat is a Gazlan. That means that he thinks the halacha is that way because he's assigning it to the position of the rabbim, of the rabbanon. And so now you have, once again, lema rabba damar ke Beit Shammai. That means rabba is establishing the position of the chachamim like Beit Shammai, which in a sense is a stira in halacha because he's trying to make the rabbim that halacha in Baba Batra, and yet it's now following the position of Beit Shammai, which would not be the halacha. Ela hacha b'shevach shel kezela kamiflegei. They're arguing about the additional value of the theft. Beit Shammai sabrei shevach zela dignig zalavi. The additional value that is accrued to the gzela belongs to the person who it was stolen from, the original owner. Beit Hillel sabrei shevach zela digazlan havi, that the additional value belongs to the gazlan. Obeplukta dahane tanae. And it is similar to this machloket Tanaim that we have, which is Shevach Zela over here, is not the appreciation and depreciation of the market value of the object anymore, but rather the value that is generated by the product or the object itself. And so that additional value or diminishment in value, does that accrue to the Gazlan or to the Nigzal? And that is this machloket d'tanya, gozelet arachel gazaza. If he steals a ewe, and then he shears it, v'yalda, and then it gives birth, mishalem ota, then he has to repay or return it, the ewe itself, ved gizotea, and the shearings, ved vladotea, and its offspring, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir believes that the shevach, all of the value generated by the object itself, belongs to the original owner. So even though the gazlan's on the hook for it from the moment he takes it, nevertheless, all this additional value accrues to the balim, even though the gazlan is the responsible party and almost becomes the owner from the moment he takes it. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Gzeilah chozeret beinei. The object is handed back to the owner, meaning that the gazlan here basically owns the object, and he hands back the original object to the owner. That's without the shearings, without the offspring that were born, because they were born under the auspices of the gazlan, and the gazlan gets to keep that shevach. Part of that is because of takanat ha-shavim, that we want to encourage the individual to return it. So there we focus on the principal amount, or getting the principal back to the owner, not the shevach. And for that reason, gazlan gets to keep the shevach and not return it to the balim. And now we're assigning that same machloket to Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And Deikonami, that's the case. Diktani, it says in our Mishnah, Beit Shammim Omrim Yilakeh Bechaseru Beyeter. He is penalized with the increase or decrease. Beit Hillel Omrim Keshat Hotza'ah. At the moment it leaves the possession of the owner, that's what he's responsible for. No more than that. Shmamina. From there you see that they're arguing about the Gizot and Fladot, because it uses the terminology of chaser and yeter. The increase of the object's value, not its marketplace value, but rather the value of the object itself from what it is done itself or created by itself, and yeter and the diminishment of that value. It does not talk about, as Rashi uses the terms, zol v'yoker. It doesn't talk about getting cheaper or getting more expensive, which would be a relationship to the market price. That's the change in the market value of the object. That's not what Beit Shammai is speaking about, because then it would have used that he is yilakeh bezol ubeyoker. That's not what he gets penalized with. He gets penalized with the chaser and yeter, which is the actual change in the object that increased or decreased its value. And therefore, Beit Shammai, like Rabbi Meir, believes that you have to give back not only the object, but anything it produced. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, you just have to return the object to the principal amount. You do not have to return the shevach that was generated. Shmamina. So that's what the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel will be in our Mishnah. Right now, the Gemara continues and says, Rabbi Kiva Omer, Keshata Tviya. Kiva says that you are responsible from the time of the claim. So then the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol, Alocha ki Rabbi Kiva. The Alocha here is like Rabbi Kiva, which is somewhat unusual, because generally we have a principle, Alocha ki Rabbi Kiva Mei Chaveiro, when he argues on a single individual, but not Mei Chaveirav, when he's arguing on multiple parties. Over here, Rabbi Kiva is arguing on Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So it would seem that Rabbi Kiva should not be the Alocha over here. Nevertheless, they're passing Alocha ki Rabbi Kiva. Umode Rabbi Kiva Mamakom Sheish Edim. Rabbi Kiva agrees or admits at the place where there are Edim, that you do not pay keshatat via, but rather at the sha'ah, at the moment that the shlichud yad or gzela took place. My time, the Amar Kral, the pasuk says, lasher hu lo yitnenu biyom ashmato, that he will give it back, return the value to the rightful owner, biyom ashmato, on the day or the moment of his iniquity. V'kevin dika edim, since there are edim, ha'ushatahu di chayiv le'ashma. At that point of time, that's when he becomes responsible for his action. That's when he becomes chayav, because the edim witnessed him doing it. That's the moment that he is responsible. If it were no edim, then his responsibility only stems from the time period where he's brought to court and the case is adjudicated, and a Beit Din says he is chayav, or by his own admission, he says that he did something wrong. That's the time that he becomes chayav. Tosafot over here is challenged as to what Rabbi Akiva's real position is. He says, Tema, Maika Savar. What does Rabbi Akiva hold? Ika Savar Shinui Koneh. If he believes that a change in the object is a kinyan, then why does he have to pay the Shevach Keshata Tviya? Why does he pay at the time of the claim when he's brought to court? If he did something to the animal, if he changed it before that hand, he sheared it, the animal gave birth, that's a Shinui. That Shinui should be a kinyan. And if he thinks that Shinoi ain't no Koneh, if he thinks that a Shinoi is not Koneh, then even if he shears it after the court case is brought, then it should all belong to the original owner. Why should that, after the court case, belong to the Gazlan? So Tosfot is challenged as to what is Rabbi Akiva's position with regards to Shinoi Koneh or Shinoi ain't no Koneh. And number three is, when it says Rabbi Akiva is Modeh, Rabbi Akiva agrees, to whom is he agreeing? Is he agreeing to Beit Hillel or to Beit Shammai's opinion? Because neither of them say, the way that we concluded in the Gemara before, that you're chayav ke shata gzela. So what Tosafot in the end says is, Rabbi Akiva's argument is actually on the premise that we had before, that the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel was about shevach, about the increase or decrease in the value of the object because of changes in the object itself. Beit Shammai said that not only are you chayav or responsible for the changes in the object's value because of what it produced, but even if there are market price fluctuations, you also chayav. And Beit Hillel, lo pligi nami baha. Beit Hillel doesn't argue necessarily on the yukra of zola. They only argue on the chaser v'yeter part of it. And therefore, when Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, I am differentiated from the opinions of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, he says, baha pligi, Beit Hillel deshino ikone. Rakiva palig azol v'yoker damar mishalem kishata tviya ben huzal o ben hukar. And that's where Rabbi Akiva comes along and differentiates his opinion from that of Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says that when it comes to cheser v'yeter, then the individual is not chayav in the shevach hagzela. He pays the principal amount and that's it. But when it comes to market fluctuations, he is chayav in those changes, like Rabba said before. When it went from one zuz up to four zuz, you're responsible for it at the value of four zuz. Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, no, that when it comes to market fluctuations, the threshold or point at which you're chayav is when you have the tviyah, when you have the claim in court. And that's when you become chayav, irrespective of whether the object is appreciated or depreciated. So in the end, he holds like Beit Hillel and says that shinoi is koneh, but that is with regards to the kinyan for chaser and yeter, for the changes in the shevach of the animal. But when it comes to market fluctuations, Rabbi Akiva says that's not the case, that appreciation and depreciation of the market price will be determined by the point at which you're brought to court and you make a claim. And so therefore, when it says here that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel both agree with regards to market fluctuations that you pay the higher of the two, Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that one point and says that you pay kishata tviya. When it comes to shevach, which is the inherent changes in the animal, like the shearing of the animal or the offspring of the animal, there Beit Shammai says you are responsible for that shevach. Beit Hillel says you're not responsible for that shevach. And Rabbi Akiva agrees with Beit Hillel there that you're not responsible for that shevach. And when it says Rabbi Akiva's molde, that he agrees that we go ke shata gzela with regards to edim, there he is being molde because he disagrees with regards to market appreciation. By market appreciation, he says it all goes kishata tviya. But when it comes to yukra v'zola, when it comes to appreciation and depreciation, he says then the edim will be koveya, that you're a gazlan from the moment that you took it, and he will then be modeh to Beit Shammai and Beit El's opinion that the determining point is the shata gzela rather than the shata tviya. So now the Gemara continues and says, Amalei Rabbi Hoshaya the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Atah Omer Kein. He says, Rebbe, do you really say that? Says Rabbi Yehuda, do you really believe that that's the case? That number one, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and number two, that Rabbi Akiva agrees b'makom sheyesh edim, that he does not have a differentiated opinion. Hachi amar Rasi, amar Rabbi Yochanan, chalukai Rabbi Akiva, afkilu b'makom sheyesh edim. Rabbi Akiva disagrees even in a place where there are edim. He doesn't change his din or his position that it goes kishata tviya. My taima. What's the reasoning? Damar krala, sher hu lo yitnenu b'yom hashmato. In the end, even though the edim witnessed the event, and they're the ones who are going to obligate him, the obligation only stems from the fact that the edim show up in court. And once they show up in court, that's what the obligation is. The obligation is derived from your appearance in court and baked in paskening that you are chayav. Yes, the witnesses are the ones that will make you chayav, but they're simply witnessing of the event is not enough. They have to then take their testimony to court, and then the court will obligate you. And we saw this in Baba Kama, we discussed this a lot, that there might be a difference between certain things like principal and kanas, where principal is an amount where you are chayav irrespective of the court. You're responsible to return someone their money or their possessions. When it comes to things like a kanas or a fine, there that's something that's only defined or incurred once the court assigns you that liability or paskins that you are chayav. So we've seen this type of differentiation before, and what Rabbi Yochanan is suggesting, that in Rabbi Akiva's opinion, the obligations all stem from the psak of the court. And therefore, that's the moment or the threshold at which this all changes over. And as we explained before, here we're speaking about the yukra vizula. We're talking about the appreciation or depreciation of the object. We're not talking about the fact that, yes, the gzela happened, b'shata gzela, with regards to chaser v'yeter. Amalei Rabbi Zerl Rabbi Abba Bar Papa, ki asat ha'atam, when you get to Eretz Yisrael, akif asuma detzur, take a detour and go over to the ascents of Tyre. Va'olda gabei de Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi, and go visit Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi, who lives over there, u'baminei, and I want you to query him the following. Ishmia le Rabbi Yochanan, if you heard from Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, o ein halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, does Rabbi Yochanan believe that the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, or not like Rabbi Akiva? And so now we want to know, what is Rabbi Yochanan's opinion? Now we know what he thinks, where Rabbi Akiva agrees or disagrees, but does he think the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva? So the reason he asked him to do this is because he's traveling from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. There are two different routes that you could take when you're traveling from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. You have to at some point cross over the mountain range that separates between northern Israel and Syria. So where do you cross over that range? There are two places to do it. One place to do it is out on the coastline, and the other one is to do it over near the Golan, coming down through the Golan area down to the Galil. Even if you go through the Golan area, you could also still go westward to the coast right away and then descend, or you could descend immediately along the Jordan Valley and then cut over into the coast or the center of Eretz Yisrael. So he's saying, you're traveling to Eretz Yisrael, I'm asking you to detour, take the longer route, and go out to the coastline to see Rabbi Yaakov Ba'idi in Suma Detzur and ask him this question. So Amalei, Achi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha k'Rabbi Akiva le'olam. Rabbi Yochanan says, Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, always. My le'olam. What does it mean that it's always like him? Amar Rav Ashi, Shalot Tomar, Ani Mila Yechad Delek Eidim. Don't say like Rabbi Yudar Mar Shmuel, that that's only true when there are no Eidim. But if there are Eidim present, that would not be the case. One possibility is to teach us the din that Rabbi Yochanan passes like Rabbi Akiva, both in a case where there are no Eidim and there are Eidim. Vinami, it's also possibly coming to teach us the Hadra the Duchta Bitbura. If the person stole it and then returned it to its original location and then it broke, that you are still responsible. The Loch is like Rabbi Akiva. Lafuke mit Rabbi Shmuel. To exclude or to reject the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, the Mar Lo Binan Dat Balim, who says you don't need the knowledge of the owners when you return it in order to relieve yourself of the obligation and to accomplish Veshiva Tegzela Asher Gazal. Rather, the Loch is like Rabbi Akiva, that Veshiva Tegzela Asher Gazal requires you to notify the Baalim. Kamash Malan. So therefore we learn from this that the Loch is like Rabbi Akiva Leolam to teach you to be in on that Baalim. We need the knowledge of the owners in order for it to be returned. V'Rava Amar Halacha k'Beit Hillel. So Rava says Halacha is like Beit Hillel. So we have Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel saying Halacha is like Rabbi Akiva when there are no Edim. But when there are Edim, even Rabbi Akiva agrees to the position of Beit Hillel. Rabbi Yochanan saying that Halacha is always like Rabbi Akiva, which according to Rav Ashi might mean that he thinks Halacha is like him, both in the case where there are no Edim and where there are Edim. And then we have Rava who takes a totally different approach and says Halacha is like Beit Hillel in the Mishnah, which is what you would have expected, because halacha is k'Rabbi Akiva mechavei ro, but not mechavei rav. Now over here, it would make sense that halacha is like Beit Hillel. And as Rashi notes, that since Rava is a batra, therefore the halacha is like Rava, that the halacha is like Beit Hillel in this case, which means that it's all kishat ha'otza'ah, which means that for chesser v'yeter, when it comes to shevach, the determining point is the shatak zela. And everything afterwards in terms of the Shevach belongs to the Gazlan or the Sholeach Yad. When it comes to appreciation and depreciation, then it goes by the higher of the Shat HaGzelah or the Shat Hotza'ah, the time that it leaves the world, like Rabbah said before in the beginning of the Sugya. That's what the meaning of saying the Loch is, like a Beit Hillel according to Rava. Alright, next Mishnah. Hokushev Lishloach Yad Bepikadon. Person who thinks about stealing the pikadon, Beit Shammai omrim chayav. Beit Shammai says you are responsible right away. Beit Hillel omrim enu chayav ad shishalach bo yad. You're not chayav until you actually steal or take the item. Shneamar im lo shalach yado b'melechet reyu. The shvuah that he takes to relieve himself of this obligation is he was not sholeach yad. implying that the problem is when he is physically or literally is shaleach yad. Now, as far as what that means, that when you think about being shaleach yad, you are chayav, Rashi over here says, amar bifnei edim. He declared it, or he told edim that he's going to steal the object. Then the chushev over here, like Tosafot points out, is hach makshava havi dibur. This makshava means articulated intent. It doesn't mean that you thought about it. It means that you've articulated the fact that you want to engage or do this thing. Tosafot over here is consistent with his opinion in many places in Shas, as he himself quotes, as well as Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes over here, that when it comes to the usage of the word makshava in the Gemara, makshava never literally means that you thought about it. What Tosafot says is that thinking about it means that you articulate it. Because otherwise, how can we hold someone responsible simply for their thoughts? How are we going to know that he was thinking about this in order to obligate him? You can't have Edim say he was thinking about it because we have no idea what he was thinking. That means that, in all likelihood, it means that he articulated his thoughts. And in articulating his thoughts, we now have Edim as to what his intent was. And that is the Makshava that we are speaking about over here. And that's what the Ramban says. Why is it called a Makshava? Because you need articulated intent. It has to be bikavana. So the chushev is not about the way that you express it. That's done through dibur. The chushev means that you intend and you have kavana for what you said. And that's why the terminology is chushev, because we need articulated intent, but it has to be something where you understand and are aware of what your intentions are, and they are consistent with what you are thinking. And so that's why the Mishnah uses the term chushev. There are those, including Rashi and Kiddushin, that say the word chushev here you take literally or at face value, and it means to think. So then the only way the person could be chayav is if he admits later on that he was thinking about taking it. Otherwise, we'd have no idea or no way to ascertain that he was thinking about this, unless he tells later on to Edim that he was thinking about it after he was already shaleach yad. The Mishnah then continues and says, Hitata chavit, binatali meni revit. If he does not pick up the barrel of wine, but simply tilts it over in order to take a revit of wine, v'nishbira, and then it breaks, enu mishalem el revit. He only pays for that which he stole, which is the revit yayin. On the other hand, higbia v'natal himenu revit. If he lifted up the barrel in order to take out the revit, v'nishbira, and then the barrel breaks, mishalem d'me kula. Then he pays the entire amount of the barrel, because then he becomes responsible for the whole barrel when he picks it up. Once he has picked it up, then he becomes fully responsible not only for what he wanted to take, but for the whole item. And that's the key element or difference between gzeila and shlichud yad, which is what we had mentioned before, that by shlichud yad, even though you're only intending to take a small portion, you become responsible for the whole amount. So Rashi back on Mem Aleph says exactly this idea, that mutaltalim ena niknim elu mishicha v'lo b'mekach v'lo l'inyan gezel v'lo l'inyan shlichud yad. So Rashi says that you need a proper kinyan in order to be chayav in gezela, in shlichud yad, or when you're engaging in commerce, you need a proper kinyan for mutaltalim. So here, without a proper kinyan of mutaltalim, you won't be responsible for the shlichud yad. So that means in the case where you didn't pick up the barrel, you're responsible for what you took. You're not responsible as a shaleach yad. You're responsible as a gazlan for the portion that you took. So then when you make a kinyan, you pick it up. Once you've picked it up, then you become a shaleach yad. Even though you only intend to take a portion of it, you become responsible for the whole amount. And that's the whole idea of shlichud yad, which is that the kinyan obligates you in the entirety of the object, even though you only intend to take a portion of the object. Where it says, v'na'ani mile. Where do we know this from? We're going back to the ratio of the Mishnah, the machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. The Tanur Banan, al kol davar pesha. It says there by the responsibilities of the Shomer Chinam, it says al kol davar pesha. Beit Shammai omim, lemei shechayav ala machshava kemaaseh. That you are responsible on your thoughts as if you acted or equivalent to the actions. Meaning pesha means something that you intended to do but necessarily carried out. On the other hand, Beit Hillel omim, enu chayav ad shishalach boyad. You're only responsible when you actually physically engage in the item, Shnemar. Imlo shalach yadom mlechit reyu. The only time you're not responsible is when you didn't engage in the object. But that shows you that responsibility is determined by engaging in the object itself. Amalem Beit Shammai de Beit Hillel, alo kvar ne'amar al kol davar pesha. What are you going to do with the pasuk of al kol davar pesha? Amalem Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, alo kvar ne'amar, im lo shalach yado, memlechet reyu. What about the pasuk that we brought? Im kein, matal malom al kol davar pesha. So then, what Beit Hillel answers in the end is, why is the pasuk of al kol davar pesha? Shechol, ein li elohu. I would have thought that he's only responsible when he himself does the shlichud yad. Amar le'abdo udu shlucho min aylin. How do I know that if he sends his slave or his agent to act on his behalf to do the shlichud yad that he is responsible? Tamalomar kol davar pesha. On any type of pesha. Again, the word pesha here is associated with dibur. And so, way Beit Shammai learns it is that your dibur, your articulated intent to steal it is what makes you chayav. Beit Hillel says, no, the responsibility only happens when you actually shaleach yad. So Al Kol Davar Pesha comes to teach you that when you articulate, meaning that you instruct someone else to take it on your behalf, their agency carries it out on your behalf, and you become a thief through the agency. And that is the other place where we know that there is shliach b'dvar aveira, is in a case of theft, especially with regards to arba'a v'chamisha. But over here, your instructions to the others to take it makes you responsible for this shlichud yad, and that comes out of Al Kol Davar Pesha. What the Gemara doesn't do is explain how Beit Shammai deals with the pasuk of im lo shalach yado memlechet re'eyu. What you would have to say is that Beit Shammai says, yes, shlichud yad you are chayav for, but it's defined by or qualified by the statement of Kol Davar Pesha. When do you become a shaleach yad? When you have a pesha, when you do a dibur. And that's likely how Beit Shammai will have to explain the two psukim. Or the Meshech Chochma goes as far as to say that even Beit Shammai agrees that Shlichud Yad only takes place when he actually takes the object, just retroactively the beginning of the Shlichud Yad started from the moment that he thought or articulated his Shlichud Yad. So they agree with Beit Hillel that you need physical interaction with the object in order to be Shaleach Yad. They just say that it begins then from the time of the Machshava. Although from the Tosfot, Divrei Matkil Beit Shammai on Mem Gimel Amud Bet, seems clear that he thinks that Beit Shammai is Mechayev, even in a case of just Dibur, without any actual Shlichut Yad. The other thing is what we learned before, that Shlichut Yad B'miksat makes you obligated on the entirety of the object, and that might be the Chiddush that comes out of the Pasuk of Shlichut Yad. He ta'at the Chavit, if he tilts over the barrel, Amar Rava lo shana ela nishbira. That's only in the case where it broke. Aval hechmitza mishalemit kula. If it fermented, it turned into vinegar, he has to pay for the whole amount. So over here, where he doesn't pick up the barrel, simply tilts it on its side and takes out a revit yayin. So we said before, he's only responsible for that revit, not for anything else. So if he leaves the barrel there and then it breaks later on, he's only responsible for what he stole, not what he left behind. The other hand, Rava says, if what went wrong over here is not that the barrel broke, but rather that the wine fermented and went bad, then you're responsible for the whole item. My taima, the reason being is, gire didehu. It was his arrows that caused it, ahanula, that were the proximate cause for the problem. As Rashi notes over here, leaving the airspace in the barrel is what allowed for the fermentation to happen or for it to turn into vinegar. Had you never opened it, have you never left an airspace in there, it wouldn't have happened. So over there we say your taking of the revi'it is the proximate cause for the remaining damage that was done to the wine. In the case where you stole the revi'it and then the barrel breaks, your taking of the revi'it had nothing to do with the barrel breaking. And so therefore you're not responsible for the residual. But where the wine goes bad, that is your responsibility because your taking of the revi'it is what caused the remainder to go bad. Higbiav and atale meno. If he lifted it up to pour it, he is chayav for all of it. Amar Shmuel, lo natal natal mamash. When he say he took, doesn't mean he literally took it, ela kevin shig bialito, afapish lo natal. So that as soon as you raise it in order to steal a portion of it, you become responsible for the whole amount. You don't actually have to pour out a portion of it to become chayav. From the moment you pick it up with intent to take out a portion of it, you become responsible for the whole item. Lema kasavar Shmuel, shlichud yad, eina tzricha chisaron. From this it would seem that Shmuel believes that shlichud yad does not require any diminishment in value of the object. Because as soon as you pick it up, you become chayav. By picking it up, you haven't done anything that diminished the value. So Amre, lo, you don't have to say that. Shani hocha, here it's different. Denechale, didavi hachavit, Kula basis laha rivi'it. This might be different than the normal case. Shmuel might believe in all other cases that you do require a chisaron in the item in order to be chayav and shlichut yad. So then why does he make you responsible for the whole barrel from the moment that you pick it up? The reason being is that you can't pick up a rivi'it yayin without the barrel and the remaining wine that is in there. They become a base. They become an accompaniment that facilitates your ability to take out the rivi'it. You want to take a rivi'it wine, you can't have a rivi'it yayin just sitting in airspace. It has to be contained somehow. It's being contained with the barrel and the other wine is what makes that rivi'it accessible, usable, and keeps it actually and preserves it. Therefore, for you, when you pick up the barrel, you want the barrel and the other wine as well. Not because you want to steal them, but because what their contribution is to the rivi'it that you do want to steal. So in this unique case, Rav Shmuel says that picking it up itself is what generates the obligation right away. But maybe in other cases, Shmuel would think that you do need a chisaron. You need some diminishment in the value of the object in order to be sholeach yad. By Rav Ashi asks, according to Shmuel, higbia anaki litol imenu dinar. If a person picks up a money pouch in order to steal a coin from it, mahu, what is the din? Chamra hu, delo mintar lagav chamra. You can only preserve or store wine with other wine. You mean you need to have a full barrel of wine. You have to have it inside a barrel. You have to have other wine there to accompany it in order to preserve it. That's why we say the din over here. Aval zuza mintar. A coin can be watched on its own, and it doesn't necessarily need the money pouch in order to be kept or preserved. Odima shiny nituruta darnake minituruta di dinar. Or maybe we'll say that it's a difference. If you have a money pouch with coins in it, versus a single coin, it's much easier to watch and take care of a money pouch with a bunch of coins in it, because it's bigger, it's more visible, it's heavier, so it's something that you will take note of, and it's easier to watch, versus a single coin that can get lost in your pocket, fall out of your pocket. So maybe over there, the money pouch is integral to the shmira of the coin, and therefore when you pick up the pouch, you become responsible for everything. Gemara leaves it as a teiku, as an unresolved issue, meaning that we don't know how integral the money pouch and the other money is to the shmira of the coin. By the wine, according to Shmuel, we're certain that the other wine and the barrel are essential to preserving the wine that you want. Therefore, you become responsible for all of it as soon as you pick it up. By the case of the money pouch and the other monies, we're not sure whether that is integral to the shmira of the coin, where therefore you'll be responsible for everything, or whether it's maybe a little bit of a benefit, but it's not integral to the shmira of the coin. Therefore, you're only responsible for the coin that you took out, not for the items that are behind, unless you do a chisaron, unless you cause some diminishment in their value. Okay, with that, we end. Perek Hamafkid, Hadran Halach, Hamafkid.